You're listening to the Embrace Running Podcast. I'm Mark.
I'm Elena, and this is episode number 133 for August 12th, 2014.
It's the podcast where we talk about running every week, coming to you from Northern California. What do we have this week? We're going to be talking some running news, some ultra running commandments, and then we're going to get into a race recap of Ragnar, Colorado, which we are just back from, which was fun, but we'll get into the details.
Yeah, don't give too much away yet.
Don't give too much away. So we're going to kind of skip our weekend training. That way we kind of have time to get to the race report at the end. Originally, I was planning on doing a short recap of Ragnar, Colorado, but we actually got a lot of comments and questions. So, and people kind of eager to hear about it. So I guess we're just going to do it like we normally do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to skip our weekend training. Basically, most of my running was done in Colorado anyways.
Yeah.
Because we were there for 4 days. So the one thing I was going to give you credit for is you did do yoga again.
Yay.
So I'll give you credit on the show for that.
I'll take it.
Anything else you want to share from your week or anything?
No, that was it. Actually, I didn't even share it, but yeah, that would have been it.
Okay, so let's get into it. Let's mention some races that that happened this past weekend. Ragnar, Colorado, obviously. ET Full Moon Midnight Marathon, which is actually a race we were going to do, but ended up not doing it because of Ragnar, Colorado specifically. So we'll have to table that for another year.
Right.
It's not too far from Vegas, or still a little bit of a ways from Vegas.
Yeah.
That was going to be the plan, go to Vegas and then go run that race. So that didn't happen. 6 days in the Dome, which we'll talk a little bit about. And then the Uphill Challenge at Outdoor Retailer, which really isn't a race. It's a very odd, cool challenge that happens at Outdoor Retailer with some elites trying to run at a 15% grade.
Mm-hmm. On a treadmill.
For 15 minutes.
On a treadmill.
Yes. Yeah. But it's just how many miles you can cover, and they kind of go head-to-head. So there was guys like Sage Kennedy and Max King and Wardian was there. I don't know.
Nick Clark.
Else. There you go. And a few others. So you can always go to, I think it's on YouTube, right, at least?
Yeah, it is.
To see.
If you want to see some of the video from it.
Yeah. All right, let's kind of get into some news stories. Let's start with the bummer. Robin Williams passed away yesterday, kind of tragically. Why would we mention it here? It's just kind of popping up on a lot of running blogs and running sites because he actually did run high school track, did enjoy running a lot at one point in time, actually did run the Dipsy race.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about double Dipsy, but he ran Dipsy before he ended up moving on to cycling at some point. I know he had a lot of going back and forth with Lance Armstrong, but a hilarious guy and a total tragedy, and he will be missed. So just kind of wanted to recognize that. So I'm probably going to, over the next couple of weeks, try to go back and get through the DVD library and probably watch some old Robin Williams films because it's always a good laugh. So, all right, let's get into some other stuff. Tinkerbell registration. So Run Disney opened today. I think as of now, it's been open for 10 hours. And then nothing sold out, right? Oh, the kids' races.
Just the kids' races.
Yeah.
So, none of the adult races are sold out yet. Currently, looks like the half marathon is only at 65%. The 10K is at 90%. 5K is at 75%. And the Pixie Dust Challenge, which is going to be new for next year, which is the 10K followed by the half marathon, is only at 90%, which traditionally, lately, the challenges have been selling out fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, Dumbo, Rebel, all of those have been selling out.
So I guess in comparison to the other events, a little less interest in the Tinkerbell. So kind of surprising, but I guess very good in that gives more people a chance who really want to do it to register.
Right.
And didn't hear of any issues with registration, obviously. So if it's not sold out, I guess active held up this time.
Right. So. And maybe they didn't have issues because there wasn't as much of a demand all at once.
Right.
Yeah.
Disney also unveiled, was this at the end of last week or over the weekend, Avengers, their Avengers medal for the race that's coming up for that one. And my first reaction was, meh.
Yeah, me too. It's not a bad looking medal, but it's like, okay, that's right.
Yeah, it's all right. It just has basically, it's silver, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you could get confused from pictures whether it's silver or gold in color.
I think it's silver.
But basically it just has the A logo from the Avengers, if you're familiar with that at all. And that's basically all that's there for the medal. So the kids' races medal or whatever you want to call that medallion.
Medallion.
Actually it looks kind of better because it has characters on there. So
right. Like the Hulk. Yeah.
All right. In elite news, Kenenisa Bekele of Ethiopia, who actually won the 2014 Paris Marathon in a 2:05, in case you're curious, has announced he is going to be running the Chicago Marathon and is pretty much set on attempting to break the course record, which is 2:03:45.
Okay.
So it'll be cool watching him go there and try to do that. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Hopefully it's not a warm year.
Yeah, weather in Chicago can be all over the place. So I know we were lucky when we did it But there's definitely been some crazy hot years. And I have to say, kind of going on a tangent, Chicago is one race that every time it makes it into the news for some particular topic, I always think about, I really want to go back and run Chicago again.
Really? That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah. So, we talked about it, but I just had a lot of fun visiting Chicago and running the race and mm-hmm. kind of everything associated with it. So every time it comes up, I think to myself, definitely need to go back and do that again at some point. Of course, the lottery makes that a little bit more difficult.
I forgot about that.
And challenging, but I still want to go back to that one. So.
That's right, because we signed up the last year that it wasn't lottery.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. So we got in no problem, but it's a lottery now. Unless you're fast enough to get one of those spots.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Let's talk about San Francisco Marathon again.
Right.
No drama this time, I guess. They have a new program, which they are calling their San Francisco Marathon Legacy Program, which is kind of strange, but what they're calling it is basically your chance to guarantee your spot for life. So you can register or sign up as a Platinum Legacy. The cost is going to be $249.99. Mm-hmm. So $250. What does that get you? That gets you guaranteed spot for life in either the full marathon or the first half or the second half. You get the right to give your spot to a family member or friend. You get a stakeholder certificate, a tech shirt, a members only discount on official merchandise and training programs, and special big bib pickup on race day. So that's what you get for $250. For $200, they call it Gold Legacy. You get all the same stuff, except you don't get the right to gift it to a family member or mm-hmm. friend.
So basically, now, either you run it or you don't.
Right. Yeah. And just to be clear, that does not include the registration fee.
Right. It's basically just to hold your spot, essentially.
Yeah. And they're saying there's a limited number of spots available. First come, first serve. So when that's gone, that's it. I did look at the shirt. It's actually a pretty cool looking long sleeve tech shirt.
Yeah.
Pretty cool looking. I think it is kind of strange. It's just such a strange program in general. And I don't really understand the reason for it, because you can go today and register for the San Francisco Marathon. It's not sold out. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a race that has had any difficulties in getting into, as right. long as you're prepared to register, you know, far in advance. But
I mean, it does sell out, but not within a couple of days.
Yeah.
Even.
You know, this would be an interesting program if it was Big Sur or New York or Chicago.
Right.
Or
where you're guaranteed.
Pick a Disney Challenge event to get that guaranteed spot. It might be worth it for this one. I don't understand it. And to call it a legacy is a little strange in its own, because in running, we refer to legacy runners as people that have done the race every single year
right.
it has been in existence. So the term legacy is pretty common in road running. A lot of races will give you special perks for being a legacy runner, and you get recognized or, you know, special stuff. But basically the chance to sign up for a legacy is just strange. I mean, do you tell people, hey, I'm a legacy runner with San Francisco? And then somebody asks you, hey, so you've run every single one.
Right.
No, I just
have a guaranteed spot.
Yes. I just, you know, popped up $250 to get guaranteed.
Yeah, exactly.
So, if you are a last minute person and don't want to have to worry about registering every year and you plan on doing it all the time, then maybe it is worth it.
True.
So to each his own, but definitely a kind of a unique program.
I say definitely unique, and I agree with the odd naming.
Yeah, they should have called it something else, maybe.
Right.
Not legacy.
Just use a different term there.
I'm not very creative, so I don't know. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Not going to think of it on the spot either, right. So I won't even try. Other race news, Rock and Roll Las Vegas. They've announced they've added a 5K, which is no shock because R&R has been doing that across the board to tons of their races, turning them into these running weekends and
remix challenges.
Yeah, challenges where you do the small race on Saturday and the other race on Sunday. And the other news out of Vegas is the headliner has been announced. It's Snoop Dogg.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're into Snoop Dogg, he will be the headliner at Vegas, which at Vegas they do before, right?
Yeah, they do it before.
Which, yeah, we were kind of, when we went and ran the race, we kind of missed it all and barely knew what was going on. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, even though I'm not a huge fan mm-hmm. of the headliner, it's probably one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name, that I've heard being associated with.
Snoop Dogg?
Yeah. One of the biggest.
Yeah. I mean, they've had
maybe
some
not
cool...
the biggest, but one of the biggest.
Yeah, they have some cool headliners, but they also have announced some names, and I certainly don't claim to be any kind of music expert, but they've dropped some names that I just say, who?
Right.
You know, I've never heard of it, and I know that there was one particularly, might have been one that we did, that, you know, they dropped the name, and I went to Facebook, and it was just person after person saying, who?
Right. Who is this?
Yeah, who is this? Why do we care? You know, so... yeah, I don't know how that works in terms of booking talent for that. But yeah, you're right. Snoop Dogg's probably
one of the biggest,
at least the most recognizable name that I've seen for a while from them. So that's pretty good. I remember Sugar Ray was one that did one of the ones in California.
Yeah, Pasadena.
Yeah. Let's talk about an interesting race. 6 days in the Dome out of Alaska, which is a very unique and strange race, I think.
That's a good way to describe it.
In a race that had a whole bunch of drama. Yeah. We were going to try to stay away from drama, but we couldn't do it this week. But 6 days in the Dome is a race that was put together. It happened in an indoor track in Alaska. Basically, the 6 days is about a six-day race. Basically, you go on the track and you run for 6 days and see who can cover the most mileage.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was $1,000 prize for that, along with hopefully achieving the American record, if nothing else. I don't know what the world record is for that. So I did want to mention a couple. Andrew Snope actually claimed the 24-hour record barefoot. So the barefoot 24-hour record ran 136.98 miles in 24 hours barefoot.
Now, that's a lot of miles.
Yeah, it is on a track, but still, barefoot is just crazy to me. I mean, 136 miles by itself, 24 hours by itself is crazy. Doing it barefoot is even crazier. Maybe even more impressive was the 48-hour record was set by Tracy Falbo, 242 miles, which I think is actually
it's a lot
crazier. I mean, you're basically going for 48 hours almost nonstop. All these runners that did the 48 and the 6 day definitely took some little naps, I think. Read somewhere, you know, people trying to sleep, you know, 1 hour a day or two hours a day, at least in the beginning. And I know I saw a video of her kind of finishing out her race, and she was definitely done. I think there's a video of her with like 4 minutes to go or something like that, and she's just having a hard time standing up at that point and just...
Let alone moving forward.
Yeah, truly done. The winner of the 6 day was Joe Fejes. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. I wasn't sure. He won the 6 day, which is kind of where the drama comes in, because Joe is basically the one that put this event together with basically the goal of getting the record for himself. So he's the one that found this location and put everything together. There was some drama because basically one of the guys that I think was running second, David Johnson, right?
Yeah.
You know, according to the rules, there was not supposed to be any pacing allowed. And I guess, you know, one of the issues that came up is, you know, is running in a train around the track pacing or is it not pacing?
Like what exactly constitutes pacing?
Because, I mean, it is a track. I don't know if it was exactly a 400-meter track or what it was. But, you know, if you got a bunch of people running all these races, there's only so much room. So at some point in time, you're going to be running behind somebody, I would assume. But I guess he felt that at a lot of points in time, Joe was basically running in a train. Some people kind of unrelated noted that, you know, there were people that were always running in front of Joe. They would take the same breaks. They would take their breaks at the same time Joe would take his breaks. So to them, it kind of seemed like pacing, and a lot of people there kind of seemed that everything going on was basically to get Joe to the record, and to the win. So David Johnson ended up basically just saying, to hell with it, and just dropped out because he wasn't, I think, too happy with kind of how the event was being handled. He was, I think, at the time about 20 miles behind, but actually gaining at the time. So he was actually feeling good at the time and coming back quite a bit. But I think he just got fed up with it and just said, eh, whatever, and left. I think he did come back on the 6 day to cheer people on. But kind of a lot of drama just from different accounts of what went on there. I will say, you know, for the winner and the record holder, I guess, Joe Fejes, it's, as one person said, I think you need a separation of church and state. It's kind of an odd situation when you're basically the person who put together the event, and then whenever there's any controversy, you're the one in the event. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe you could have worked with other people to put on the event and then distance yourself, but he obviously did not seem distanced enough from the race to make it
more like objective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem beyond question from the things that I read. It just seemed like a very odd situation. And I encourage people, if you want to learn more, go and look up the articles. It's there's even blog posts from people who were at the event and definitely have their views on what was going on. And perhaps they'll do another event at some point in the future to kind of settle it, maybe, if there's any kind of question on who should be the record holder. We'll have to go out and do this again for another 6 days. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and they do have other 6 day events, not necessarily in Alaska, but they do have those. So maybe it'll be done there.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Just want to mention something I was reading today. It's kind of detailed, so I'm not going to get too detailed into it. But there was some new statistical analysis that suggests that running more than 30 miles per week may be excessive and increase mortality rates for runners who have previously suffered a heart attack. So that's not talking about normal everyday runners, like probably you and me who haven't had any heart issues,
right?
Or certainly who haven't had a heart attack. But if you've had a heart attack in the past, there's some statistical information to look at that shows that maybe that 30, I think it was actually 31.5.
That's kind of like the threshold.
Yeah, it was the threshold that going beyond that is kind of set you up for some increased mortality rates. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to dig into it too deeply because it's pretty technical. And if you've had a heart attack and you're continuing to run, you should definitely consult with your doctor.
Right. Talk to your healthcare provider before making any decisions.
Yeah, good job. We should put that disclaimer at the the top of every single show, I guess. Other things going on, kind of, I think this was actually the Portland Marathon that tweeted this to me. There's a movie project on Kickstarter called What Moves You, and they're putting together a movie. Kickstarter's, you know, that website that you go onto and you kind of contribute to the project or the service or whatever. You're kind of basically donating money, but you get perks in advance. So I'm sure if you donate a certain amount, you'll get a copy of the movie when it comes out. But I'm definitely a sucker for running movies. Mm-hmm. So anything that's a running movie, I mean, we talked about that a week or two ago. I'm kind of interested in it. The one thing I will say, I watched the video they put together that basically says what they're doing and what they need the money for and what they're going to do with it. All I really know so far is they're going to cover four ordinary runners. And I think through the Kickstarter project, they're going to try to get a fifth runner. But I really don't know what the movie's about.
It's about what moves you,
I guess. I mean, they just kind of generally said, you know, maybe it's about, I mean, from the title, what moves you, or, you know, I guess why runners run or what kind of connects us all. But it seemed very general. I watched it and I just said to myself, I don't know what this is about, but I am a sucker, so I'll watch it when it comes out. I'm not going to donate to the Kickstarter, but if it comes out at some point, whether it's, you know, a special event in theaters or, you know, straight to kind of a Vimeo purchase type of thing, I'll probably check it out. But if you want to take a look, I'll put a link in the show notes and on the Kickstarter page. And like I said, it is Kickstarter, so it's always kind of I always like to warn people, kind of donate at your own risk because there's no guarantee that you're going to get anything back for your money. But if you think it's worthwhile and you think it's interesting, or maybe you can explain to me what it's really about.
I mean, it does look like they're going to focus on average runners. And nobody, no elites or anything like that. Yeah, so.
Which is cool. Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me, going back to Spirit of the Marathon, although I did kind of like those movies because they kind of focused on some average people and some elites.
Faster than average
people? Faster than average or elite or sub-elite people.
Right.
But at least in those, I knew they were shooting for this one race.
Yeah, that's true.
Whether it was Chicago or was Rome, right?
Right.
For the second one. This one, I'm not sure kind of where it's focused, but I know they took some footage from, I think, Big Sur and Portland Marathon. So some familiar races. So check it out if you're interested. All right, let's get into some ultra running commandments, which come from, it's funny because this is Hal's ultra running commandments, and this is Hal Kerner, ultra runner extraordinaire, not Hal Higdon kind of coaching extraordinaire, although he was a runner, great runner in his time too. But so ultra running commandments. Get into this.
Okay. And this is actually an excerpt from his book that just came out, I believe.
Yeah, which is his field guide to ultra running, right?
Right. So I read through these commandments and we'll go through them. And some of them do seem to be a bit specific to ultra running, but others seem to be, or ultra racing, I guess. Mm-hmm. And others aren't quite as specific to ultra racing, but just racing in general or racing on the trails.
Right.
So yeah, it kind of goes across all of those. So we'll kind of go through these one by one. So first one is do be patient. So remind yourself to appreciate and enjoy the journey. The race ahead is long. Allow it to unfold. So and I think you can kind of interpret that in lots of different ways. Don't start off too fast.
That's a big one.
This is a big one. Yeah.
And this might not apply to a 5K, because if you're doing a 5K, you might want to start out fast. So that one does lend itself
to
marathons
and
ultras.
That race is not long. And you might not be able to enjoy the journey because it'll be over quick. So next one, do be gentle on yourself beforehand. And this one, at first I'm like, what do you mean be gentle on yourself beforehand? So basically taking it easy the day and the night before race day. And they said they definitely, race directors don't make it easy with all the expos and the speakers and everything that's going on. And, you know, there's a lot of things that could take your energy and, But basically, you know, discipline yourself to keep that to a minimum and make a conscious effort to sit and rest with your feet up as much as possible. So then that made sense. I'm like, oh, okay. Be gentle on yourself before it.
Yeah, be wary of those big race expos. It's funny because it popped in my head because we were talking about Chicago earlier. You know, I remember Chicago, the expo. It's a very big expo, so it was a lot of walking there. But the biggest problem was I think we walked back to our hotel post-expo.
I think so.
So it ended up being...
That whole trip was a lot of walking.
Yeah, it was a lot of walking in general. But if the expo doesn't get you, it might be the walk back to your hotel.
Yeah, no kidding.
Post or beforehand if you do that.
So maybe you don't do that walk back to your hotel.
Right, catch a cab. Maybe
exactly. So next one, do wear a watch. So you can... So Hal mentions that he relies on his watch not only to know if he's on race pace, but also for proper and strategic eating and hydrating. So, for example, he knows he wants to eat a gel every 20 to 30 minutes or drink an entire bottle of fluid in an hour. So I think that's good not only just for your pace, but if you're going to track like on longer runs, marathons, mm-hmm. or longer races, I should say, marathons, ultras, that you kind of want to have that time marker.
Right.
Yeah, for fuel and nutrition so you don't get behind early on.
I mean, I never run without my watch. And by watch, I actually mean phone because...
Because that is your watch.
That is my watch.
And you wear it on your wrist, right?
Well, my arm.
Really, that'd be pretty wrist. Funny. You should just wear it around your wrist.
That'd be a lot of weight, actually, to kind of
on the
be
wrist.
Kicking around. Because your wrist moves a lot more than kind of your upper, your arm. But I think it probably is a good idea to once in a while ditch the watch in your training. Mm-hmm. At least, maybe not on race day, but at least in your training, do some runs without your watch. Do it by feel or just relax and have fun and forget about the watch. So
right.
A little bit of an opposite there. Take there.
Yeah. Next one. And then this reminder, this is for race day. So next one, do fuel often and early. So that kind of links back to the last one, you know, having your watch so that you can make sure you're fueling and hydrating, you know, according to whatever your plan is, if you have it based on time or distance even. And so that here you don't want to get, you know, to the point of either being hungry or thirsty. You definitely want to load on the front end. It's going to be a lot more difficult to get the calories and nutrition in towards the end of the race.
Yeah, don't dig yourself a hole.
Right.
I think I always make a concerted effort the day before the race to make sure I drink enough. That's not race day, but beforehand. Right. And I will. I mean, we'll get into Colorado, but I actually did a really good job on day one of Colorado hydrating.
There you go.
Which is really shocking
on
for
race
me.
Day.
So
there you go.
I actually nailed this one this time.
All right. So next one, do you have more than one goal? And I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah. A goal, B goal.
Exactly.
C goal, D goal.
Yeah. And that way, you can go beyond that. So that way, if your primary goal goes out the window, you can rely or reach actually for your secondary or tertiary goal. So maybe your first goal is, you know, to finish first in your age group, you know, and if you're not going to get that, maybe your second goal is a specific time or a personal PR or something like that.
Right.
And then maybe your next goal is just to finish. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think,
or any variation of that, you know, it doesn't have to be those three specific goals.
But... Yeah. This one is actually super important because, you know, let's take a marathon and say your goal is to run whatever it is, a 4-hour marathon. As your A goal. And sometimes you could be 4 miles in and you know that's not going to happen.
Right.
So rather than spending 22 miles upset or depressed or sad that you are not going to reach your A goal.
And trying to talk yourself into staying in it, even though you're not going to reach your A goal.
Or your only goal.
Right,
It's good to have that B goal of, you know, well, if I can't run the 4, I'm going to run the, you know, 4:20 or I'm going to finish or,
right.
you know, maybe your goal is just to have fun.
Yeah. Or I'm going to stay with the 4:10 pace group, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it would definitely be a bummer to kind of, so early in a race, just be kind of bummed out because you missed something. So
yeah, I think that's probably, I agree. Next one, do be ready to be resilient when things go wrong. So for example, if you roll an anchor. Yeah, don't roll an anchor. I don't know how you,
Okay, I'm going to insert this one. Don't take anchors on your runs because they are heavy and they will cause drag. Okay.
And you can roll one apparently. So if you roll an ankle or your breathing is erratic or your stomach goes, you and your crew will have to think on the fly. So be ready for and open to that. So I guess be flexible.
Yeah, so because something's going to go wrong.
Right.
At some point in time, you know, I mean, this is kind of focused on ultra running, but, you know, we're obviously throwing kind of marathons in there with that. At some point in time, you're not going to feel great.
Right.
Or you're going to get to an aid station and there's no water.
So you have to figure out how to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's probably something I have to work on a little bit.
Really?
Well, I just said the aid station thing because, I mean, that really threw me at Mountains to Beach.
Right.
When I got to that one aid station, there was no water. That just kind of, it threw me, annoyed me, ticked me off and kind of, for
like,
sure.
Ruined kind of your race for a while?
Yeah. So I should have been a little bit better with that than I was.
Like bouncing back?
Yeah.
Got
Other than that, like stomach issues, you know, I always expect it to not feel good at some point in time and usually passes. So I don't have to deal with that. Or, you know, you take that funny step and you almost roll an ankle, you know, that kind of, that stuff doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah. Next one, do push yourself a little. So this is a race after all. So go for it. Don't be tentative. Push yourself up some of those hills. Find that pace that you've trained for and stick with it. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you're still racing.
Mm-hmm.
So you do want to push yourself. You've been training for how long for this?
Yeah, you put months in.
Yeah, so push yourself to that limit.
You paid the money.
Exactly.
Don't shortchange yourself.
Put in the time. Yeah. So do visualize success. I like this one.
Yeah,
course.
This is looking at this, I said, this was yours.
This was mine, yeah. So visualize success, visualize the course, visualize getting through specific aid stations. That really does, I think, and apparently Hal thinks too, helps for race day success. So and this, you know, visualize it ahead of time and visualize it during the race too.
Mm-hmm.
Especially I think if you're having some tough times, try to visualize something positive, like crossing the finish line or
visualization? Yeah. Thank you.
We're doing really great tonight.
It's something I actually struggle with quite a bit.
Apparently.
In saying and in doing.
Yeah.
So, but I've mentioned that a million times. It's just, I don't know why I really don't do it. I'm no good at it. So,
have you tried?
I think so.
You think so? That sounds like a no.
It seems very unnatural for me. So I'll work on it. You have to remind me before a race. You know, maybe a couple days before a race. We're going
to visualize
assign you that
task. Yeah. And you think if I remind you, you're really going to sit there and visualize
it? Well, I'll try. I'll give it a shot.
All right. Okay. So next one, do have fun. Make the most of the day and be grateful for the unique opportunity to be there. When things go awry, remind yourself that you're there for the fun. Be present.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
enjoy it.
Please.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. That's what, I mean, we obviously, I run. Because it's fun more than anything else. So, I mean, I love challenging myself, but at the end of the day, everything that comes with running to me is fun. So.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess the best combination would be to challenge yourself and push yourself and have fun
and
be present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And last one, do stay aware. So pay attention to where you are, be familiar with the course beforehand and know the markings. Don't just mentally check out when you are running. It's your responsibility to stay on the course. So this obviously would be more applicable to non-road races.
Mm-hmm.
So, and obviously more applicable to ultras.
Right.
You know, 100 milers, that sort of thing.
But you definitely get into road races where you should look at the course, should know what you're getting into.
Right.
Pay attention to your surroundings.
Yeah.
You never know when you're going to fall behind the race. We'd mentioned that with kind of SF and not knowing where
exactly
to go. Or maybe being familiar with where aid stations are at. So, all right. Is that the last one?
That's the last one.
So those are the do's. Next week, we're actually going to go through his 10 do nots. On race day.
Right.
But
so
we're going to save
tuned
that
for
next
that.
Week. Yeah. All right. Let's jump into kind of the main topic of the day, which was the race that we just did this past weekend. Mm-hmm. So Ragnar, Colorado, which happened in Colorado. Did you see that? Pretty good, right?
No way.
So we've actually talked about Ragnar several times before because we are definitely, I think at this point, Ragnar veterans. We've done Napa and SoCal and trails, and we obviously have fun doing them. So we keep out and continue to do them all the time. We'll give you the 2-minute elevator speech, I guess, on what a Ragnar is, just in case you're new. Ragnar, Ragnar road races, 200 mile relay, 12 people, 2 vans. Each runner runs 3 legs. Usually, each runner will typically, in total, run anywhere from 10 to
20 something, 25.
Miles. Yeah, normally I would say 22, but. In case anybody's doing Napa, there is a 26.3 runner on there.
Yeah.
So I guess now I'll have to say, you know, it's usually around 9 to 26.3 miles in general. So and each van just kind of, you just hand off to the next runner and then you kind of, each van hands off to the next van. So runners 1 through 6 and then that van's done, you hand off to the next van, which is runner 7 through 12. Does that make sense? Did I get the pitch correctly?
Yeah.
So we flew out to Colorado. We actually flew out to Denver and then met up with our team, most of our team in Denver at the airport, and drove out to Copper Mountain, which is where the start of the race was.
Mm-hmm.
We were there on Thursday. Race was going to start Friday morning. Start times are staggered. Starting first teams go off at about 5:30, and the last teams, I'm not sure what time they went off for this race.
But in most instances, it's somewhere like early afternoon.
Right.
Yeah.
And what they do is slower teams start first, faster teams start at the end, just based on how long it's going to take you to cover the approximate 200 miles.
Right.
So we actually had a 7:30 a.m. start time there at the Copper Mountain Resort, which ended up being an awesome place for a start line.
Yeah.
Because Copper Mountain is at least in the winter. I mean, they have activities in the summer too, but it's think of a ski resort, ski village. So lots of kind of hotels and condos around, and they had a golf course there. Confusing with the finish, yeah. But so kind of think of that environment, and that's where the race was going to start off, which we did at 7:30 a.m.
Yeah, and again in the summer too, they have a lot of like mountain biking and different activities there too. So
yeah,
summer music and.
But yeah, it was a really cool just start area because there was kind of plenty of parking, and the scenery was very cool, and they had a restaurant there that was open, so I was able to get a breakfast burrito before the race started, so that was awesome. Two thumbs up there, because it was super good, and I was going to be runner five, so I actually had a lot of time to kill until I was having to go run. So.
Right.
So yeah, so where do I want to go from there?
So start off at 7:30. I was runner two.
Two.
Yeah. So as soon as our first runner takes off, we all have to take off in the van, essentially. Yeah. That's kind of how it goes, and just head over to the next exchange. So I don't know how much detail you wanted to
Well, let's not go too into it. Okay. Things we kind of want to mention. Ragnar, Colorado had approximately 160 teams, which is a very low number by Ragnar standards. Napa this year. Like I said, if you're doing Napa this year, beware that one, there's one runner who's going to have to run 26.3 miles.
Right.
Number two, there's going to be 500 teams out there, or 500 plus teams out there.
Yep.
Which is a crazy amount of teams. So Colorado, 160 something, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
We've done Napa with 300.
SoCal, I think, with like 400. SoCal's
now in the 400 range. Yeah. So 160 teams, it's a very small amount.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely felt that number through the entire race.
Right. Even from checking in, when we had to check in and get our bibs and everything, and then start time, everything. I mean, not start time, but start line, the whole race.
Yeah. And what we mean by that is the race was not crowded at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I said probably 20 times during the race, I cannot believe how few vans there are in this parking lot or how much room there was to park at these exchanges, or it could actually get pretty lonely out there. Now, all these things aren't necessarily a bad thing. They aren't a good thing. It's just a different feeling than I think what we're used to at other Ragnars.
Right. Agreed.
I mean, it was definitely amazing. Basically, every single exchange that we drove to, and when we say exchange, that's basically where your runner go, where you go and park and your runner hands off to the next runner. There was tons of parking at every single one of those. There was plenty of room to get in and out. There was no issues with that. I know kind of Napa and SoCal, you get to some of these exchanges that are smaller places and it's super crammed and cars, vans are coming in, vans are coming out, and it gets super crowded, and that's just kind of how it is. And this one was just complete opposite of that, which was, in terms of getting in and out of exchanges, was fantastic.
Yeah.
That part I definitely loved.
Just a lot easier.
Just so much easier.
Yeah.
The flip side to that is when you're out there as a runner, you might consider it a good thing, you might consider it a bad thing. It was definitely a lot lonelier being out there on the run.
Yeah.
And Napa and SoCal, where there's 10 more teams, you definitely are out there with more runners. So, like I said, I don't know if you consider that a positive, a negative. I don't know. I think it's just different. And it's
different.
Fine.
Didn't bother me at all. Did it bother you?
No.
With it being lonelier?
No.
Yeah.
Didn't bother me.
Me neither.
One bit. I actually kind of liked it.
Mm-hmm.
The one difference is that it's, Ragnar, you go out there, you know, you're doing this relay, and people decorate their vans, and people do costumes, and
There's music playing.
Yeah, and it's
people just dancing around, and it's kind of just a big running party, moving running party atmosphere. Right.
This one was much more subdued. Mm-hmm. There was less big white vans. I don't know, a lot of people just chose to use their own vehicles or got SUVs. Beyond that, I think less people decorated than I've seen in the past.
Way less.
And it just seemed less of a party atmosphere than other Ragnars. Which, good, bad, I don't know. It was kind of, I enjoyed it being different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can kind of go get that.
It was definitely different.
I can go get that atmosphere in Napa, so I kind of liked it being a bit of a change.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely liked being able to easily get in and out of exchanges.
Quite
something different.
I mean, one other thing that was different in terms of what we've done before is that, and I think this is a good thing, that a lot of the, or several of the legs were on a paved path that ran through a good portion of the area that we were in. And it's a good thing because you don't have to deal with, cars and streetlights and that sort of thing. But the flip side to that is there were more legs that were unsupported.
Mm-hmm.
So it couldn't have like your car, your van, or your team kind of come out and support you because you weren't really accessible from the road.
That's a good point.
So yeah, so that was just something that was kind of different too, so.
Yeah, tons of this race are on these paved bike paths that kind of wind through all parts of Colorado. the positive side is you're, you know, you're away from streetlights and you're away from traffic and you get to enjoy the scenery. So I liked all that much better. And it definitely makes the race, I think, probably easier for Ragnar to put on because you're just crossing way less streets and less kind of cities and neighborhoods that you're disrupting.
Because you just continue on this path. I mean, not every single leg was like that, but a good chunk of them, especially more in comparison to like what I can relate to is Napa and SoCal. Yeah. So,
you know, the one thing I'll say is that in terms of scenery and in terms of the course itself, I think Colorado, I mean, all I have is to compare it to the ones that I've done when compare it to Napa and SoCal. Colorado blows Napa and SoCal out of the water in terms of scenery and the course itself. Like I said, running on paved bike paths, so much better than side of the road highway stuff that you spent a lot of time doing in Napa and SoCal. The scenery in Colorado, if you live in Colorado, you live in an awesome place because it was truly beautiful the entire race.
Yeah. I don't remember being in like any one spot where I couldn't look around and be like, wow. Like the entire time.
Yeah.
The entire time.
My first leg, I started right near a dam by a lake and I just had to kind of run up this paved path and you kind of have to go over the dam. And after that, I ran, I think my leg was 7 miles in total, but I probably ran 4 or 5 miles basically around this lake on this paved path. It was certainly beautiful. I stopped for some pictures. That was completely awesome. It wasn't until I think probably the last half mile that I had to go into town to basically run to the exchange.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was just, I think, so much more beautiful of a run than I've done at Napa or SoCal. So that was completely awesome. And I love that about this race.
Yeah. I mean, and not to say that the other races that we've done don't have scenery as well, but it's just, yeah, I agree. This one is just like it, every single minute, every single mile, every single, like everything, it's just, it's beautiful. You just look around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my first leg was like that. My third leg was 6 point something miles. Almost all of it was on a paved bike path along a river with some mountains on my right side. And again, it was just beautiful scenery.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first one was 7. My last one was basically almost 7 again. That's 14 miles of just gorgeous scenery. And I, you know, stopped for a few pictures and just kind of enjoying the river. Did get 2 mosquito bites because I told you guys in the past that mosquitoes love me. So they even found me in Colorado, which was crazy. But wasn't even that early in the morning or anything. I know my night run was probably the least interesting. It was only 2.5 miles that I ran. And I think I was through some random city, I guess, but it was kind of a small town. Not much to look at, but it was the middle of the night. So, I mean, just having that sandwich between two awesome runs, I was totally fine with that. Although, interestingly enough, I did have to run through a park where the sprinklers were on.
On your night run?
On my night run. So, water was shooting across the path at one time, which I kind of did a nice, maybe I'm just young enough to do kind of a hurdle over it. And then the second sprinklers were just busted, just shooting water into the air. So I got covered in a little bit of water at the beginning of my run, but it didn't bother me too much. But yeah, that kind of sums up, I guess, how my runs went. So the night. Oh, and somebody did stop me in the middle of my night run. What time was it that I was running?
I have no idea.
I don't either. I don't know if it was midnight, 1 in the morning, something like that. Some car pulled up next to me and was asking me for directions to somewhere. And I just kind of looked at the guy and I don't know, I'm running a race here, you know?
Right.
I don't know if I looked like a person.
I'm not even quite sure where I am.
I honestly had, he asked me, I think he was looking for some lake. I don't know. I just looked at him. I'm running a race and I just kept on running because I, like you said, I had no idea where I was at.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to give anybody directions, but yeah. So, I mean, do you kind of want to mention your runs?
Yeah. I didn't know if we were going to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So my first run was actually almost completely on a paved bike path with great views of, you know, some streams and mountains. And, you know, I took a bunch of pictures, of course. I think just the last, I don't know, 0.2 mile was not on the paved bike path. Because then I had to, you know, get to the exchange. So kind of crossing through like a parking lot or, you know, something like that or on the edge of the parking lot. But yeah, it was nice because I didn't have to worry about crossing any streets or, you know, anything like that. You just ran, you know, so that was awesome. My second leg, which was my night one, I think it was 3.8 miles, I think it was. And again, like you said, it's nighttime, so you don't get to see too much. But I could still actually see because I ran earlier than you did because I was runner 2 and you were runner 5. Right. So I could actually still kind of see like the silhouette of the mountains around me. So that was pretty cool. It's like, oh, I can still see them, you know, with the moon and everything. My night run was actually on the side of like a main road, you know, so wasn't that exciting in terms of it wasn't a paved bike path anymore or, you know, dirt trail or anything like that. But it was still pretty nice and peaceful. Didn't see too many people out there. I think I saw two people total, actually, or runners meaning, you know, just total, which is not that many.
No.
In comparison to other Ragnars that we've done. The only thing I didn't like about my night run, which has nothing to do with the race itself, is that there's, you know, we're running against traffic. And there wasn't tons of traffic at this time, but there's still some. And so there's a couple of, you know, people that come towards you and everything. And, you know, you're just hoping that they can see you and, you know, praying that they don't hit you. But there's a couple of motorcyclists that actually kind of try to, I think, run me off the road there. So that was, yeah. So I was kind of mad about that for a while. You know, more, I wasn't actually scared. I was just like mad. I was like, oh, you know, why would you do that? That's just messed up. You know, like I'm just out here running. I'm not even like doing anything to you. So, but anyways, that passed. And then my last run was, excuse me, about 5 miles, I think. I don't even remember now.
Yeah, I think
it was like five something. And it was pretty hilly. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading the description of it being on a dirt, not street, but a dirt road. A dirt road that you were actually going to share with the vans. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh boy, it's going to get super dusty. But it actually wasn't. It wasn't that dusty. And there weren't that many vans. You know, so it wasn't that bad. And it ended up being like a beautiful country road.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. It was hilly. It definitely wasn't easy.
Yeah, you had some hills.
Yeah, but it was, I think that might have been my favorite one, actually. I don't know if it was because it was my last one and I knew I was going to be done soon, but it was just some great views. It was like early morning, maybe like 8:30 in the morning, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I think that's about
the time. Yeah, so, you know, sun's coming out, or it's already out, but it's just, you know, the sun's like just in a really awesome spot where everything just looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the hills on that one, I actually had to pass a lot of cattle greets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to, that's the only time I ended up stopping, is I had to be careful and make sure my foot didn't fall through, because I was, like, convinced if I tried to run over them, I was just going to, you know, my leg was going to fall through, so.
Yeah, because I know when we were waiting for you, at the end of that leg, there was actually a cattle grate right there.
Yeah.
And every single runner that finished off their run kind of said, oh, another one, you know, right, as they slowly stepped yeah, over it, you know,
exactly.
They're like, oh, another one, and then they actually ended up finally opening the gate.
I didn't go over that one. Yeah, I'm like, what did I do?
Probably 5 minutes before you finished.
Perfect.
That way,
because I would have hated. Because especially that last little section of that run was downhill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was just like bombing down the hill. And I'm like, yeah, after all those hills, I'm going downhill now. I'm going fast. And if I would have had to stop for another grate, I would have been like, oh man, like right before the exchange. So, but yeah, I can't agree more in terms of the views are just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the really difficult part about the whole race was the altitude. I don't think we've mentioned that.
No, that's,
that kind of goes along with Colorado in general, but it was tough. I mean, I think my first leg I had, overall it was uphill, and I think I started at like 9,000 something feet, you know, and then went up like 200 or 300 feet, which isn't a huge amount over 6 miles. Mm-hmm. But if you're starting off at like 9,200 feet and I'm like a sea level person, ouch.
Yeah, we basically spent the entire race running at 9,000 feet or higher. We live normally here at sea level. Some of our van mates live, I'd assume, pretty close to sea level. We actually had one local.
We only had one
in our van.
Yeah, one from Colorado. The rest of us were pretty much sea level people.
And I think so. We all struggled with the elevation.
Yeah.
I know that after I finished, I mean, I had a really tough time on my first leg. You know, it's one of those, you're kind of, you just can't get your breath from the elevation.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of trekking along, and
like your legs feel fine, right? But it's like the breathing.
Yeah, my legs felt great really the whole entire race.
Yeah.
I was tired on the last one towards the end, but felt really good in general in the legs. It was my lungs that you just can't get your breath.
Right.
You know, you're huffing and puffing, and you're putting all this labor into your running, and you know, you look at your pace and you go, really? I'm running that slow? I feel like you know, I feel like I'm all out here. What's going on here? But it was just so hard to breathe. Literally.
Yeah.
I know that after my first run, I was actually coughing, and you could actually hear it in my chest.
Yeah.
I kept making the joke, you know, I feel like I just smoked a carton of cigarettes or something like that. I sounded like I probably had a chest cold or something when I coughed.
And then we had another van mate, same thing.
Same thing right after.
His first one, he was doing the same thing.
Yeah. So it was,
I mean, and then it got better, thankfully, and not worse, but.
Yeah. It definitely got a little bit easier throughout the race.
Mm-hmm.
Which in some ways doesn't make sense, because it's not like you're acclimating in that short period of time.
Right.
But, I guess to a certain degree, you're just kind of getting used to
not being able to breathe.
Yeah. So I think if you're like us and you're going out there to run, you're definitely going to, your pace is definitely going to suffer.
Yeah.
I think you're easily going to go out there and run at least a minute slower than what you would back home.
Mm-hmm.
If you're coming from sea level easily, I think it could easily be 2 minutes slower. And that's kind of with, you know, that thing of where you're putting in basically the same efforts, but it's just going to translate into a much slower pace.
Yeah.
So I think anybody that kind of went to this race from out of state and a low elevation was certainly going to struggle. That might be part of the reason why there are fewer teams, because this is looked at as one of the more difficult Ragnars, mm-hmm. because of the elevation. So if you're going to travel for one, you know, should I travel to that one that's at, you know, 400 feet, or should I go to the one that's at 9,000 feet? I think I'll take the 400. That seems easier. But
I mean, and not only being at that sort of altitude, but there is a lot of descending and ascending, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of climbing and descending on just the whole course.
Right.
So it's not like, I'm just staying at 9,000 feet the whole time. You know, like everybody's either like there weren't many, if any, flat legs. Like you were always kind of headed in one direction.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, at least the ones that I looked at, or at least in our van, so runner 1 through 6.
Yeah, I didn't have it too bad, actually, with my first. Well, actually, no, I had to climb early on my first one.
Yeah, see, I mean, so maybe overall it wasn't that bad, but you just still had a, like, it was, none of mine were flat. I mean, mm-hmm. my second one was downhill, which I was super fast on that one, but it wasn't flat by any means, so. And that just takes a slightly different toll on your body, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the elevation was definitely the story of the weekend.
Right.
I think it's one of those where it was kind of, you know, it's so hard to breathe here. This elevation is brutal, but it's so beautiful to look around, but I can't catch my breath, but it's beautiful.
Yep.
You know, that was kind of the best way to kind of surmise the weekend. So I think all of us that came from sea level that went there struggled with that, because basically our van actually had a ton of Ragnar experience. I think between the six of us in our van, I think we probably have already done 50 Ragnars, and we're on the low end of everybody of our van. So lots of experience running Ragnars, but the elevation and some of the toughness of the course definitely made it difficult.
Yeah. So. You work for those views.
Yeah, you
do. But they're well worth it.
Yeah, I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
What else do we want to say?
Oh, we missed seeing Dale out there.
Yeah, Dale is a listener who was out there, and we missed him. So catch you next time, I guess.
Maybe you can come out here next time.
Yes, come to Napa.
Yeah.
It's a little easier.
Yeah.
I will say the volunteers throughout the entire course did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the best volunteers that I've ever seen
at a Ragnar. Agree.
They were just super nice, super polite. Most of them seemed to show up.
Yeah.
Which is always an issue.
Very motivating.
At some point in times.
Very positive. I don't know if you said that already.
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but they were.
Mm-hmm.
Super polite.
Mm-hmm.
I will say all the, you know, you're basically going to spend all weekend hanging around porta potties.
Right.
So I was actually amazed that every single porta potty I went to all weekend long actually had alcohol gel or hand sanitizer in it.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. And they actually had toilet paper in it, which is one tip I can give you is if you're going to Ragnar, bring an extra roll of toilet paper.
Yep.
Because they do kind of run out on a normal basis.
Mm-hmm.
But on this one was a very unique Ragnar in that I saw more Ragnar staff vehicles than on this single race than I probably have in every other Ragnar combined.
I completely agree.
So I was almost, I mean, at one point I looked and there was one right after the other and I said, wow, I've actually done a Ragnar Napa where I didn't see a single Ragnar staff vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an amazing sight. So I saw them kind of just driving the course constantly. I saw them lots of times refilling porta potties with toilet paper, which is always a welcomed thing to do. So yeah, that part was kind of really amazing and good to see. And I think part of that might be, you know, you might see them more because they probably have an easier time getting around this course than they do some of the other ones.
Courses.
I mean, SoCal, that's a difficult course to kind of be driving around because you're going to run into cities and highways.
Same thing with Napa. You're in and out of cities all the time. And and along the lines of the volunteers too, you know, at every exchange, there's water stations so you can, you know, refill your water bottle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to make it a cupless race.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're pretty close to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but there was always, I never had an issue where there wasn't water there.
At the exchanges?
Yeah. It was always there. So, and that's volunteers too that are, you know, doing that for us. So.
Yeah. This is actually, on a personal level, this is probably the greenest Ragnar that I've ever run because I took my handheld bottle and then I think I had my Gatorade, which I drank. And then I just kept refilling the two basically all weekend from the large containers of water at the major exchanges. So for me personally, this is the least amount of water bottles that I've ever gone through at a Ragnar. So mm-hmm. for me, you know, this was a very green race. And actually, all the water at all the major exchanges that I went to was cold.
Mm-hmm.
It always tasted fine. Except I think the very last one was kind of warm. Tasted a little funny. But all the rest, actually, that was post-race, so I didn't really care. But everything else during the race, they actually did a great job with. One of the exchanges that are, it was nighttime, they had grilled cheese sandwiches for sale.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that was a really good exchange. I like that one.
A grilled cheese sandwich at, what time was it? I don't even know. 11
like,
p.m.?
Yeah, probably 10 at night.
Is a
like
welcome sight. They were selling them as a fundraiser for some organization. I apologize. I don't remember the name. I think it was a $4 grilled cheese sandwich. Yeah, they actually did have meat.
They had soup. Yeah, they had meat. You can get tomato in your grilled cheese.
And yeah, sandwich and soup was $5.
Right. They actually had fruit there. So they had you know, orange slices and bananas. And those were actually free.
Mm-hmm.
They also had goldfish crackers, which were also free.
Yeah.
So I was like, what? Salt, free?
Everybody there was joking because it was the saltiest goldfish crackers ever, which isn't a bad thing in a race. Yeah. But
it's basically like you took a teaspoon of salt to put in your mouth and one goldfish cracker.
It was truly amazing. And everybody was talking about it. You know,
they're like, oh my we don't gosh, know why.
They said they had opened, you know, multiple packages and everything.
They were all
one,
the same. Yeah. And they're like, and we checked the package and it doesn't say like added sodium or anything. So, and then they were also selling little random things. And
Oreos.
One of them, Oreos. And one of them being Goos. They actually had Goos. And they were like $4 for $2. And I was like, what?
Which is amazing price.
Yeah. I'm like, if I didn't have to fly back, I'd buy like this whole thing right here. So yeah, that was, and they were very nice and polite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you did buy some goo there, right?
I did buy some goo. Yeah. I bought four.
It's too good of a deal to pass up at all. Yeah. Some of the major exchanges that they had there were actually some of the nicest that I've seen too.
Mm-hmm.
The one we're talking about with the grilled cheese, they actually, some type of recreation center.
Yeah.
And they actually had, they had indoor basketball courts, but they also had an indoor soccer field.
Mm-hmm.
Which was actually used for sleeping. And so, I mean, kind of imagine sleeping on an indoor soccer field. The lights were pitch black over the soccer field.
Yeah.
It seemed very, I mean, we didn't sleep there, but it seemed very quiet. Seemed like a great place to sleep.
Right.
And I know one of the other major exchanges you could actually go into, I think it was a school lobby, which had carpet. So you could have gone in there, at night and sleep. So, the major exchanges seemed, very, very good.
And more than one had indoor showers too.
Yeah, which
like
I never
in a locker room type setting, which I didn't use, but I mean it's not too common that you get more than one location
with
the shower and especially an indoor shower.
Yeah, Napa showers are few and far between.
Yeah, so, although some of the exchanges are a little bit different this year, so we'll see if that changes with them.
Yeah, they had to move some stuff for Napa because I think there's too many teams to fit in some of those old exchanges. Yeah. But yeah, we actually ended up doing something that I've never done before. We actually slept in a hotel. Basically for our rest period at night. Mm-hmm. I've never done that. You kind of had done that once before.
Right.
So I think the team was kind of concerned with it being cold. So we actually did go and sleep at a hotel. I think we were only at the hotel for maybe 3 hours
mm-hmm.
because our other van, which was running, had very short legs at night. And our other van was, as we joked all weekend, was very young and very fast.
Right.
which does not give you a lot of sleeping time. If you want to sleep the most, then what you need is your other van to be very, very slow.
Right.
Because that gives you the best chance to sleep. But yeah, so while our other van was running very short night legs, we actually did go and stay in a hotel, kind of the whole van kind of packed into a hotel room where we got about maybe we were there for 3 hours.
Yeah.
We actually figured out a way to kind of sneak in an extra 30 minutes or 45 minutes because one of our runners actually went to go spend the night with his family. And then he was the first one up. So he actually got to go start his run by himself and we just met him at the end.
So
that gave us maybe 30-40 minutes mm-hmm, extra time. So I've never done the hotel thing during Ragnar. I think if that's even an option is very dependent on every single Ragnar because it just depends on where the exchanges are and where hotels are.
And sometimes you just don't have one
close by.
Yeah
I think Napa is kind of very difficult to do the hotel mm-hmm. sleeping thing. Me personally, I think I prefer to just sleep outside. That's always going to be my preference. Just because I'm super comfortable outside in a sleeping bag on the grass. And I think that gives you the most amount of time for sleeping,
mm-hmm.
assuming you have the ability to sleep outside, which for me is fine. I think it's a good way to maximize time because all you do is you basically finish your run, drive to the next exchange, find some grass, and go to sleep.
And you're there until it's time for your runner to go.
You don't have to leave time to drive or get to a hotel or check in or anything like that. But
I'm okay sleeping outside as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually okay sleeping inside at an exchange too because sometimes you can be on a gym floor or something
like that.
So it doesn't have to be outside necessarily, but I'm really okay sleeping at an exchange.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have trouble with that. So
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was glad to actually just get the chance to kind of try it because I thought I would always like sleeping outside better and kind of doing the hotel thing. It was completely awesome being able to take a shower.
Yes. After that felt two runs. Really good.
So, I mean, if that's
nice
important,
and clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of unusual feeling nice and clean during a Ragnar. Right. But, yeah, at that point we had to run twice. So getting to take a shower was kind of nice.
Right.
But yeah, I'm kind of fine with just sleeping outside somewhere. Mm-hmm. I actually always recommend people don't sleep in, you'll find major exchanges that are gymnasiums. I actually recommend avoiding those at all costs because although they're inside, they tend to be, if you're sleeping on a gym floor, so think basketball court, it's very hard. So, I mean, if you brought a sleeping pad, that's fine. But if you're just going to sleep on the floor, it's very tough. Number two, they tend to be very loud because everything inside echoes.
True.
And you have people waking up and coming in and leaving at all hours of the night. So I find them to be very noisy and disruptive and uncomfortable. If the exchange happens to be something where, you know, there's some carpet or it's an indoor soccer field, that's a different story. But if it's a straight up gym.
Although my only concern there with being indoor outdoor is if it's really cold.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather trade off the noise and the hard floor for not being super cold.
Yeah.
So now if the weather doesn't really matter, then yeah, I'd actually rather sleep outside on like some nice plush grass. That's my ideal actually.
Right.
Yeah.
And obviously you gotta be careful with that because although I prefer outside last year, it rained. So I ended up sleeping in the van, which is a horrible way to do it. Don't sleep in the van.
But some teams do that as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
a lot of vans, people. Or they kind of split up, you know, some people will go sleep on the grass or indoors and then other people will sleep in the van. So
yeah.
I just mentioned weather, not to sidetrack us, but we actually got really lucky with the weather.
Fantastic.
In Colorado. It was perfect. I don't even know what to say because it could not have been better. It was, there was a couple of sprinkles here and there, but really it didn't rain on us.
Mm-hmm.
There was no like thunderstorms, which can pretty much happen on a daily basis there.
Yeah. The weather in Colorado
and it didn't
can
get that cold
quick.
At night.
Yeah.
And I tend to get cold pretty easily, and it did not get cold at night.
Yeah, it was much colder the Thursday night before before we started.
Yeah.
It was much colder than the
race
night.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah,
and it
the
wasn't
weather worked
hot
out.
Either.
No.
Yeah, it was warm, but it wasn't hot.
Yeah, I had it a little bit tougher just because I think my day runs were basically around
later in the
noon
day.
Or one or two or something like that, so I had more midday kind of sun beating you up, which the sun at 9,000 feet.
Right. It's different than the sun at sea level.
Yeah, beat you up a little bit more, although it wasn't that hot. I definitely felt the sun.
It's just hotter. I mean, like the sun itself, it just feels like hotter on your skin.
Yeah. And sunblock way more important than 9,000 feet. Obviously, I tried to be good about reapplying as much sunblock as possible. But I'm typically not too great at that. But, but I definitely did make an effort and really try to be good about that. So, so what else? Should we just mention the finish?
Yeah.
And then we'll kind of go back in case we missed anything.
Mm-hmm.
The race finished at Snowmass, which is another ski resort area village. So very similar to the start. And we actually didn't mention, the start was at Copper Mountain. The next major exchange where we kind of handed off to the other van was back at Copper Mountain, which is unusual to kind of go
Have
back to where you
twice.
Start.
Although it actually worked out really well.
Super well, because you're back at, like we said, a really cool location, and they had restaurants there.
Yeah.
A very cool environment and plenty of parking and super easy. And so that part actually worked out super well. But yeah, the finish was at Snowmass. Like I said, snow village, you know, in the winter, kind of that resort feel environment was definitely very festive. We actually ended up parking kind of up towards the top of the resort. And we actually dropped our bags at our hotel because we had time to kill anyways. But we ended up taking the gondola or the tram. I don't know what they call it over there. From kind of the top of the mountain over there where we had parked down to where the finish actually was.
So it was actually kind of nice being above the finish and kind of seeing everything from above. That was pretty cool.
So we got a little bit of a preview of what was at the finish before we got there. And we got to the finish and because we're van two, it's the other van that kind of runs at the end. We had a chance.
So we were actually van one.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Van two finishes
correct.
For us. So yeah. So we were waiting for van two.
Correct.
Yeah.
We had a chance to kind of walk around and, you know, you stop by the Ragnar gear booth and check out some of the vendors that are there and
some of the freebies.
Yeah, like, that kind of stuff.
Like, I'm actually going to mention Fat Boy Ice Cream.
Okay.
That's what it's called.
Oh, yeah. It was
pretty
good.
They had some pretty good ice cream sandwiches. And I think a lot of people who tried one went back around for seconds or thirds or et cetera.
And they did because we've talked about hoarding stuff.
Oh, yes. Please mention that part. Yeah.
The guy there at the ice cream was telling us, take more, take as much as you want.
You can come back. So, we didn't. And there was plenty.
Yeah, he had plenty. But so I think everybody on our team was taking had two or three ice creams by the end of it, which tastes awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
It was kind of cool because you are kind of at the bottom of this little ski resort. Your last runner would kind of run down the hill to the finish line. So it was kind of nice because you could see them at the top of the hill running down. And so you got a nice long warning on kind of when they were coming. And
they're basically running down like some switchbacks. So it's not a straight shot, which is kind of cool because you get to see them for sure. But then it's kind of, I don't want to say cruel, but a little bit because it's like, oh, you're so close. But okay, you got to run left. Okay, now go right. Now go left.
I mean, I kept saying if I was the last runner, I would have just said to hell with the switchbacks and just bombed down the mountain.
Yeah.
Because that last runner actually had a really tough leg to finish off the
race. I'd say the toughest one out of the whole thing.
So everybody, all the guys that typically finish the race, they looked like strong runners. Well, the guys or girls. Everybody looked like they were strong runners, but they all looked super beat up by the end of it because it was a super tough leg at a really high elevation. And
it was basically, it was on single track trail, essentially.
Yeah.
It actually shared some of the same trail as Reinhardt Trail Snowmass. So
yeah, so they definitely looked, everybody who came in, including our last runner, definitely looked beat up and tired and definitely recognizing that last leg was very, very tough. But yeah, I would have just bombed down and said, forget those little turns and turns and turns. But
you would have cut the course short, huh?
Oh, yeah. But it was nice looking up and kind of seeing them run down the mountain and stuff. And then, as is tradition with Ragnar, your entire team joins your last runner, you know, usually 100 feet, couple hundred feet from the finish line, and you all run across together.
Which
we did, and then you take your post-race picture, and then
you get your medals.
You get your medals, and your race is done. You got a double medal.
Right.
Because you did both this race and Ragnar Trail Snowmass.
Right.
Which is a very cool medal. Both medals are very cool. The double medals are even cooler.
Yeah, it's the Rocky Mountain Fever double medal, so it's pretty cool. And we do have pictures up.
Yeah, we posted all this stuff, lots of pictures on Facebook.
Yeah, and the medals, Google the beautiful Plus. Views, all of that.
Yeah.
So take a look. Anything else that we left off?
You also do get a Ragnar patch.
Oh, yeah, and that's new now.
Yeah. You used to get a sticker, but I guess now you get a patch. I guess you can add it with your, we talked a while back about
my double dipsy
your
patch,
double
huh?
dipsy. You can put those on the same hat, maybe.
Which I have my double dipsy right here.
Because at the time, I was joking at the start with one of our teammates, you know, all right, I got this patch. I have no idea what I'm going to do with it. You know, at least the sticker I could throw it on my car or, you know, throw it on a window or something. But the patch, I was joking. I don't know what to do with a patch, but I guess throw it on a hat.
Yeah. I'm going to have to get a hat just specifically for my patches.
Yeah.
You know, because I have so many of them, too.
All right. What else do we want to say? Our first run through with our van was kind of unusual because we actually ran quite a bit of mileage.
Yes.
The total combined,
almost like a quarter of the whole course.
Yeah, we ran, I think it was 45 miles, which the race in actual distance was 195, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So for your first leg of everybody in your van to basically almost be a quarter of the race, that's a lot of mileage. So, I mean, we ran from 7:30 in the morning till 2 something.
No, it was like 4.
No.
Yeah,
was
it was. Yeah, it was. Wow.
So, I mean, we ran for a long time, which is very unusual. You know, I kept saying to myself, this is so weird. You know, normally, you know, by this time we're not handing off to the next van. We're getting ready to kind of take over again already.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was, you know, everybody kind of first way through for our van. Van 1 had a lot of mileage. There was a lot of 7s. I think
there's
somebody
a 9,
had an 8 or 9.
There's a 10 something.
Yeah. I think the shortest was a 5.
Yeah.
But everything
and there's
else.
There's only one of those.
Yeah, one of those. And then everything was 7 or more. Yep. So we did start the race with a ton of running, which, you know, I don't know. Good, bad, doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
It's just mileage.
I'd kind of rather do it more towards the beginning.
Yeah.
Personally.
That's much better than at the end.
Yes.
You know, had you had to run kind of for
the
hours.
The majority
hours,
of it at the end. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I mean, anything, any details we missed before I kind of sum it up here?
Nothing that I can think of.
You know, I will say my last leg, there was supposed to be one aid station. There was not.
Which is funny because my first leg, there was supposed to be one aid station. I passed 3. So,
which is really, really weird. Yeah.
And they're unmanned, you know, water stations. So you just got to fill your own things. So.
And I thought they were supposed to be cupless water stations.
I saw cups
but
at
there
one
were
of my, yeah.
So
not all three that I passed had cups though.
Oh, okay.
I think only one or two of them did.
I think it's a good thing to a certain degree to say it's cupless and then have cups just in case, because, you know, there's always somebody that didn't bring their bottle or, you know, maybe you're, you know, a nut like us and came from sea level and, you know, weren't prepared for the elevation and, you know, having a little extra water is not a bad thing. So, but yeah, my last one, they didn't have it there, which is not really a surprise. But
yeah.
Any other details before we wrap it up?
Nope.
I mean, overall, Ragnar, Colorado is an amazingly beautiful place to have a race. The The course was awesome. The volunteers are awesome. It's definitely not easy, especially if you're coming from sea level.
Mm-hmm.
So be prepared for running at elevation. It's more mellow than some other Ragnars, and definitely less crowded. I know on my 2.5 miler at night, I saw one other person. I mean, that's a short run, but yeah, I only saw one other person for 2.5 miles. I did pass them. So credit
there you
to
go.
Me. I didn't
okay.
pass many people, but I did pass one.
So you got a road kill, huh?
Yeah, so I did get my kill on my night leg. And I know my last leg, I went 3 miles during the leg without seeing a single person.
Wow.
Which it's just unusual for runners. It was actually kind of nice just because I was enjoying the scenery, so I didn't mind it at the time. But yeah, but a very tough race where I think weather can definitely play a factor. Didn't for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was perfect for us. No complaints there. But I think you should kind of be prepared for some random weather at some point in time. So. Very cool, very happy, very excited that we got to do it. We ran with an awesome group of people. Our van was a very experienced van with a bunch of runners who've done tons of Ragnars. Our other van was actually a bunch of, you know, we'll call them newbies. Mm-hmm. We called them the young fast van. I think
we'll call them newbies. Yeah,
I think one person had done Ragnars in the past, but everybody else was new to Ragnar, so it was kind of cool hanging out with them and, you know, kind of talking about how the race would go and kind of hearing their experience through their first Ragnar was definitely interesting.
Or even preparing, you know, the night before. And,
Going, wait, how's this work? You know, what's going on?
And kind of going through the Ragnar that you get with all the details. And our van is just kind of like, okay. we'll take a look at it tomorrow.
We've done this a lot of times before. This is old hat. This is, you know, piece of cake. And, and truthfully, I mean, it was kind of an easier race in so many ways because, you know, less cars and, you know, exchanges were easy and even directions, you know, it seemed several legs, one after the other was, you know, the directions in the little rag mag, which is the book they give you with all the maps and everything, just basically said, you know, leave this exchange, drive straight down the road to the next exchange. You know, and the very next leg was, you know, leave here and drive to the next one.
I was
like, oh, this can't get any easier at all. So, yeah, so, I mean, definitely awesome. If you're local to Colorado, you should definitely do it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make the trip, I think the views are kind of worth the price you will pay in elevation.
I agree.
So go out there and do it. I don't know if I'll, you know, I don't know if we're going to go back at some point in time or do it. I'd like to go back and be van 2 just to kind of get the other scenery.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if that'll be anytime soon just because, you know, I actually do want to go do Ragnar Vegas and Ragnar Arizona at some point soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at some time it'd be cool to go back to Colorado and kind of be the other van. Or, I mean, we're talking about just going back to Colorado just to visit Colorado.
Right.
Kind of
get Not related to Ragnar, just to go.
And it'd be a really cool place to bring your bike and just bike some of these paths.
Yep.
All over the place. You'll cover a lot more miles, a lot easier than it is running the race. Mm-hmm. So. Anything else?
No, nothing. I think you covered it pretty well.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to throw in is just kind of some random relay tips, which we've talked about in the past. But I was just going to kind of throw some random ones here at the end. I mean, we did talk about relay preparation, I think, back in episode 88. And I think you can go back to episode 89 and hear our recap of Ragnar Napa if you are doing that one coming up soon. Or just kind of want a view of one of the other Ragnars. But a few random things that are just a few tips. Drawstring bag, which what the heck am I talking about? So normally you would bring a duffel bag with your gear because... Mm-hmm. You got to bring several different outfits and some clothes and maybe you're traveling.
Some nutrition. Who knows what else?
Yeah. So the one thing I did this time that I have been bad about in the past was I brought a, you know, a drawstring bag. That's kind of like your gear check bag at other races. And that's where I kind of threw a bunch of goose and I threw my armband and my earbuds and my extra battery for my phone. What else did I throw in there? Just kind of the random things that you're going to need throughout the day.
Some chapstick and sunscreen.
Yeah.
And mine.
It's kind of some of the random stuff. So it kind of... You can take that to the front of the vehicle and you don't have to keep going back to your duffel bag.
Right. So you basically have it like at your seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you kind of have a place self-contained in the vehicle to kind of keep all your stuff.
Right.
Which I know I have a friend who does that in Napa all the time and it works great. But I know in the past, sometimes my vans for Napa have been very disorganized and there's just kind of crap everywhere in the car. And then when it's your turn to run, you can't find anything.
Yeah.
So I suggest the drawstring bag just to kind of keep all your stuff in the car. Mm-hmm. And that's easy to move if somebody else needs to move it or take your seat or anything like that. Cause you know, you got constantly people rotating in and out of the vehicle.
Right.
The other tip, which we've talked about many times
but it's still a really good tip.
Still really good. It's Ziploc bags. So get like the gallon Ziploc bags and put the clothes that you're going to change into to run. You know, if you're thinking you're going to have three different running outfits, you could put one outfit in each bag. I've seen people number them with, you know, black marker. And then what you do is when you change, you take your old sweaty stink clothes and you put it in the Ziploc bag and you seal it. And you can throw it in your bag and it will kind of keep the stink of the vehicle to a minimum.
Right.
And especially keep your bag.
Because it's not like you have time to dry this stuff out or wash it or anything. So you just need to contain.
Right.
Yeah.
And I do recommend that, you know, if you're going to run three times, run in three different changes of clothes.
Right.
Your van mates will appreciate you.
Absolutely.
More.
And reapply some deodorant in between.
And you will feel actually...
you'll feel better.
Much better. Because you do have large chunks of time between runs. So make sure you do that. One of my other tips, I think the best way to do it is if you have people who have an app like Run Meter, Runtastic, you can program all those to kind of send emails or texts to your teammates with how you're doing on your run. Kind of send your tracking and your pace and all that. And it makes it real easy for your teammates to know when you're coming in.
Right.
That's kind of what I like to do. We actually had teammates during this race. A lot of people would, in our van, were texting when they got to 1 mile to go.
Mm-hmm.
That we kind of
know
when the next runner would go. The biggest tip I would actually have is a good thing to do is pay attention to what time your runner goes out. But what I found in the past is, you know, you say you head out on a run and it's 8:37 and, you know, we look at our watch and go, oh, it's 8:37. Okay, she started at 8:37 and 10 minutes later you get back into the car. And nobody can remember what time it was,
right.
Even though you just
like,
said it 10
time
minutes
did
ago.
They leave? Yeah.
And that becomes more of a problem as the race goes on because, you know, you're just kind of repeating these times, random times throughout the race.
And so. Plus you're tired and haven't had much sleep and all that. So.
So the best thing to do is when your runner goes out, what I always do is take a screenshot of my phone because it has the time right on it.
Yeah.
So if you're the next runner going out, you start your run. I just kind of, you know, you hit the home button and the power button and you take your screenshot on your phone. You got an Android. Do it however that does it. I don't know. But then, you know, 10 minutes later when I would normally forget what time you went out, I can just look at my phone and go, oh yeah, it's, you know, it's the last picture on your phone.
Yep.
Oh yeah, she went out at 8:37, and then you can do math, you know, she's doing a 6 miler and, you know, she's doing a 9 minute pace and kind of calculate as a way to predict if you're not doing kind of the app thing or you're not texting with 1 mile to go.
Right. So. At least pay attention to the time that they leave. And one other thing that in regards to when you can kind of anticipate your runner to be done that we were doing is each time we'd ask each person around like what are you thinking in terms of time or pace,
right?
You know, and I think like you were saying with our van, we've done a lot of Ragnars and so we have a generally pretty good idea of about how long it might take us. I think it's pretty rare that we'll come under that time. If anything, it might be over.
Mm-hmm.
So at least you have an idea of, okay, you know, doing a 6 miler and she or he said, you know, definitely wasn't going to be faster than 10 minute miles. All right. So now we know that it gives us like 60 minutes. So
yeah. Cause you don't want to not
idea.
Be there
right.
when your runner comes in. Because that's just frustrating and that's just bad teamwork there, I guess
you can call it.
I don't know. So
you want to be there.
Yeah, asking is a really good idea. We were really good about that. Just kind of, hey, what you think you're going to run? Okay, cool.
Yep.
See you in an hour, you know, or, you know, I'm going to run
10. I mean, and then you still get there
11.
Earlier than that, but at least gives you an idea.
Yeah. And this one was actually not as much of an issue just because, like we said, exchanges were small. There wasn't tons of people. You go to some of the bigger Ragnars and it's, you know, parking's an issue. If you're going through cities, traffic is an issue.
Right. You're stuck at a light forever.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a problem if you have a, you know, you might have a runner that's a, you know, a 7 minute miler, 8 minute miler, and they're running a 2 minute leg. So you have very little time to drive to the next exchange. And if you hit traffic, it's a problem. So,
right. And, I think in those cases, it might just be inevitable that they have to wait for you.
Yeah. And the last tip, just bring alcohol gel or hand sanitizer because you are going to be hanging out with porta potties all weekend long.
Yep.
Although I will say at Ragnar, Colorado, every single one I went to had alcohol gel, which was amazing. I was kind of shocked by that.
Yeah, I didn't go to a single one that didn't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess I didn't write it down, but I'll throw it in, is if you're doing a longer leg, bring your own water bottle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they have, I think it's, if a leg is longer than 4 miles, it's supposed to have a water station. And you'll see in the Rag Mag where they're supposed to be aid stations, a lot of the aid stations are just not there where they're supposed to be. You do have random races where I'm just blaming high school kids. Who knows if it's actually high school kids where aid stations have been just taken or moved as just a joke in the middle of the night.
Right, to make sure you're self-sufficient.
So
with your fluid and fuel if you need it.
Just take care of yourself. And, you know, if the aid station's there, it's cool. It's a chance to kind of refill your bottle. But if it's not there, then
you should still be good.
You're golden and you're good. So, I think that's any other last minute tips?
No.
If you do have any questions about Ragnar or you know, you're looking for tips or ideas or have questions, I think we're a pretty good source to give answers on that at this point because we've done several of them and we have more coming up this year. We have Napa coming up and then we have Vail Lake, the trail one. It's a little different, but we even have those coming up. So should we get to some feedback?
Yes. Message received. All right. So actually heard from Amanda and Paul who were letting me know that bird that I took a picture of last time is a heron. So
yeah,
thank
you. Thanks for coming through.
And apparently a lot of people know what type of bird that is. I just had no idea. So yeah, but thank you. Confirmation there of what it is. So appreciate it. I heard from Dale, who did watch 4 Minute Mile, the movie that we talked about last time. Thought it was a good movie and, you know, definitely thanked us for the recommendation there. So it's nice to be able to, you know, talk about something like that. And, you know, it's an interesting movie to watch and kind of get, you know, positive feedback too. Like, right. Yep, we agree. You know, I saw it and I liked it. So heard from David, who was letting you know about the Cliftons, the Hoka Cliftons, that they
said they ran
the running narrow or something.
A little bit narrow.
Yeah.
Actually went to Running Warehouse online yesterday to order my Cliftons, and they don't have any in my size and will not be in stock till September 1st. So,
bummer.
I was ready to pull the trigger yesterday, but they were not in stock. So I will have to wait, I guess, 2-3 weeks here. I'll keep checking to see if they get them in.
See
early.
If that changes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably going to stick with Running Warehouse. I don't know. I still have gift cards from last Christmas. So.
Well, then you might as well stick with
I'm
going to
wait because it's a little bit cheaper, but I'm looking forward to giving them a try. Actually, I didn't mention I ran one leg in my Conquests, my Hoka Conquests.
Oh, that's right.
And I did my other two legs in my old A6 Kayanos, which was interesting. I actually enjoyed it just because they seemed a little bit lighter and a little bit faster.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. All right, heard from Sarah, who can't wait for our Ride on Colorado recap. Hey,
you go.
Yep, hopefully you just heard it. She's actually be running her first Ride on Relay this weekend at Great River.
Yeah.
So good luck. Have fun. And I already sent you some tips, but we just talked about some more just now. So hopefully that'll help you out.
Yeah, and let us know how it goes.
Yeah, let us know how it goes. And then we heard from Jill, who, after looking at her at the Colorado double medal, says she's excited to get her Mudslinger medal next month, which is also a double medal for Ragnar, if you have done Ragnar Trail Appalachians and DC.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's, we didn't talk about Ragnar does lots of what they call double medals, which is for doing two Ragnars, but they're each one has very specific specifications.
Right.
So, you know, you get the Gold Rush double medal if you do SoCal and Napa, if you do Vegas and any other, there's a double medal for that. Mm-hmm. There was the Rocky Mountain Fever. So
for the two Denvers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to look, you know, if you're going to do one Ragnar, go and take a look at their double medal list to just see.
Yeah. They have the Saints and Sinners.
Yeah.
Which is Wasatch in Vegas.
In Vegas. Yeah. So, but they're very specific. It's not every combo. It's not, you don't get one just for doing two.
Right.
So if you're going to do one, you know, go over there, check it out. See, you know,
see
which other
one
that
exactly.
you would have to do. That kind of qualifies you because the double medals are, they're bigger than the regular one. They're heavier, and they're more unique and they're cooler than the regular one, as they should be, because, you know, they're rewarding you for doing multiples. So give it a check out.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
All right. That's going to do it this week.
The website for the podcast is embracerunning.com. You could find us on Facebook at facebook.com/embracerunning. Send us any comments, questions, or feedback at feedback@embracerunning.com or leave us a voicemail at 925-400-7223. If you enjoy the show, give us a review on iTunes. So until next time, embrace running.